Okay, next question, ma'am.
Hi, Tina Smith, resident of Park City proper. I have a question, but first of all, I wanted to point out, I've been corresponding with Frances Rimillard that wrote that editorial, and she's created an organization called Friends of Camas Valley. And as we speak, there is a group site, website being created so that the citizens can blog their concerns or what's going on and just give and give Camas, give Summit County a voice, solidarity. And so we know what each other is thinking, if Tesoro's telling the same story to all of us. And that should be up and going. We have our final meeting Saturday. And that can, but if you would email Frances at rimillard.rimillard@gmail, and that's spelled R-E-M-I-L-L-A-R-D, rimillard.rimillard@gmail.com, and she'll put you, she'll get you on the website. The pipeline thing for, well, to save, you know, the 250 trucks, which is, you know, I want them to put a finite number on how many trucks they're going to put on the road and say, oh, we'll take these 250 off. I don't think it's going to happen. But the curious thing about this pipeline is that it has to be heated for 135 miles at 170 degrees, and it's going to be pumped uphill and to a refinery, several refineries in Salt Lake, whose air quality is often compared to Beijing. The whole thing seems kind of silly. I don't really have a question, but the heating process, or are they going to, it'd be nice if they used solar to heat their oil to go through, but that's a concern. So if it doesn't heat, if it doesn't flow, how do they know? I'll leave it there.
How do they know? And then Chris, maybe you want to jump in on what's the best case future hold for us? I mean, is there a possibility at some point of moving to alternative sources? What percent are they going to, what percent are we going to use of alternative sources and so forth?
Well,
how far off is it?
It's far off. I think Dave would, okay. It's quite a ways, but there is a lot of movement. And I'd like to say that we, in this state, we have a unique opportunity with respect to acting to use less fossil fuels, because in this state, our electricity comes primarily from coal, and that coal comes from this state. The oil that we burn in our cars, really, most of that comes from this state. And the natural gas, I would probably say the vast majority, if not all of the natural gas that we consume in our homes, comes from this state. So if we really want to start to make a difference about what we see going on in this state with respect to energy consumption and fossil fuel consumption, well, we can do something about it. We can figure out how we consume coal, oil, and natural gas and start to use less of it, because that impacts directly this state. So there's opportunities there. And that's, I find that, I think that's very unique among other states around here. So okay. I don't know if that's
Scott. Did we answer the first part of your question? Where did you? Oh, did we? Or did we? Did I step on your question? Okay, just repeat for our radio audience, how are they going to heat the entire pipeline to 170 degrees?
The way that it's been told to me, so I'm not the expert, and I'm just repeating what I've been told, but for the normal process, it's only heated at several different stations at the beginning, and there's probably two or three different intermediate stations where that's at the pump stations where it's heated and then put back into the ground. Now, in an emergencies where they lose heat or the flow stops for any length of time, then there's a possibility, and they put in the technology in the pipeline to heat the pipeline as well. But normally, they don't need to heat the pipeline all the way for that 136 miles. But like I said, if it stops flowing, they've got to heat it up again to get get that flow moving again.
Okay. Right. But I will say, Tina, you make a good point. This is not normal crude oil. This is oil that is waxy in nature, that can clog the line if not kept at that temperature, 170 or so degrees operating temperature, and reheated to achieve that. And it's being operated at higher than normal pressure. It's 1,200 to 1,400 PSI. Is that a little higher than normal, or is that standard?
In today's pipeline technology, that's about...
Okay.
1,200,
but,
1,400
but
is normal for most
pipelines.
It's
not the normal crude oil that we're used to seeing. And so there are going to be, again, design and construction and operation challenges. Tesoro says they have systems like this in place. When I went to an open house, they said, well, we have a system like this in place. So we're already, we have a learning curve there. And I didn't get a lot more details. You're right, Tina, that this is unique. This is a unique pipeline.
Sir.
My name's Mark Breidenbach. I live at the south end of the county, upriver from Woodland, actually not about the same area as Tom Clyde. And I just wanted, not so much a question, but just a comment on the process and that. When the process first started and we had our public meetings, we, as a group, I am part of a cabin group there, and there's several cabin groups, and we're embedded in Tom's ranch there, and we kind of put out the message that we wanted to have someone from Tesoro come out and talk to us, and because we had some sensitive areas, some very wet areas along the Provo River there, and all of that. And one thing I just want to echo, which I've heard from the other people, and there's some information from Tom that the ground surveys are in progress on the different alignments, which is good. But one thing they did do is they listened to the comments that were made, and they basically came out and sat down with us. So we sat down as a group, the cabin group. We met with Tom. Our cabin group was trying to get the pipeline from not taking out one of our cabins, get it moved out of our cabin group, because it really wasn't the place to build a pipeline. Chevron comes through there, but it's basically a marsh. It's been down under the marsh for a long time, and there's a way to move the groundwater, change the groundwater movements with substantial excavations. And Tom was good enough that, and his brother was there on behalf of the ranch, and we talked through it, and it sounds like Tom and his brother are ending up with more of the alignment. But one of the good things coming out of it is, and I know with the water agencies wanting to get the pipeline away from the rivers, away from the reservoirs, where it can get into the drinking water supplies. It sounds like Tesoro is looking at other alignments which will get the pipeline more off of the valley floor where the groundwater basins are, where the water can get into the groundwater, and that and get it up on some of the upland and the rockier areas where it can be contained. And I just want to echo that I think the best thing for some people, I know our area is kind of different because our cabin groups are well organized. We talk among ourselves. We're a more rural area. We're embedded within the ranch, and there's a lot of discussion there. But for some of the other areas, it really does help if there's a area where someone thinks the alignment, that there's a better place for the alignment. It really does help to let the oil company know. And try to get them to come out. I know they had big meetings. Camas was a huge meeting that followed Bountiful and the Heber meetings. And I went to that, and basically there was a crowd of people. It was huge. But I think that what came out of it, I think Tom echoed that, is we attended the meeting, but the maps were the same as here. You really couldn't tell where your property was. The roads weren't displayed. And the people who came to those meetings, I don't think really even understood where the pipe was, but to the extent that reaches of the pipe, and I know some people don't know their neighbors, some places it isn't practical, but I just wanted to express that it's red. Okay, I'll shut up. But they did come and work with us, and it does help, to do that. So there is
local
that opportunity.
Local knowledge and input and persistence.
If there's going to be a pipeline, it's your best thing to communicate, ask to communicate with them, and so they have the best knowledge of what they're getting into. Maybe there is a better route, and
right. And nobody knows their property better than the property.
So we kind of did this on a more mini scale, and it really did help.
Thank you for those comments. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Dan Syroyd, and I live in Timberline in Summit County. And there's been a lot of discussion about how responsible Tesoro is, and I guess I find that a little disturbing, because here they're taking waxy crude, piping it into the Salt Lake Valley, and causing even more pollution in an already polluted area. And so that calls into question how responsible they are to even propose that in the first place. And in the second place, I think the comment about what's going to happen when the inevitable happens and these pipelines break and there's a cleanup required. And I think the solution to that is to have them post a substantial bond. And I guess my question is that in the works, in the planning to require that? Thank you.
Well, we're still kind of in a dispute. The county's still in a dispute whether we have the authority to regulate locally. So our take is that we do, and therefore we would have the ability to post bonds. Whether that is the case, I don't know. With any luck, some of that whole issue would get avoided because our main priority is to move the pipeline out of the wetlands and away from the rivers. And if that happens, then we reduce the chance of damage and the need for bonds and things like that. But there are bonds present. The question is who gets to set the bonds, which level of government, et cetera. Anybody else want to take a shot on that?
Would the county intend, if the dispute is settled and the lawsuit is dropped, you would still intend to post some bonds, but the bonds would be less because you would feel that the new route would be not in as sensitive an area. Is that a correct summation?
Yeah, as you know, Bob, we already require when you go through our roads or over our bridges, there are, and in the construction phases, we require bonds. So there would be an extension of that, but again, you've got some supremacy arguments going on in the courts.
Thank you. Ma'am?
My name's Tracy Stevens. I'm sorry my voice is a little bit gone tonight. I live in Camas Valley, and I have two concerns and a question attached to each of them. When they had the hearing, well, the open house in Camas, I did ask the representative from Tesoro, who was kind of running the pipeline part of the get-together, and he said that thus far there has not been this type of pipeline run at this altitude and at the altitudes that are going to be run through Camas Valley, that they were beginning to test it, but that to this point in time, this is a whole new area for them to be working at these altitudes. So, of course, that concerns me that we may have a higher risk of disaster around that. And the other is that when I asked him about the capacity and future capacity of the number of gallons that can go through, he said basically the sky's the limit. It isn't that difficult to increase the amount of oil that goes through these pipelines. So I'm wondering, playing on both these other comments, where is Salt Lake City? Bob, this is probably a question for you. Where is Salt Lake City? Where is Salt Lake County? As they're looking at, you know darn well that if Tesoro is making this kind of an infrastructure investment, they're going to ramp up the amount of oil passing through that pipeline and ramp up production of the refinery. Salt Lake City's finally to the point where they're starting to pay attention to air quality issues. It seems like it's getting a little more serious. Where is Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County? Why aren't they getting involved in this?
Good question. We didn't hit on that. Let's take the altitude first. Is that some of our more technical guys? Is that a factor to your knowledge?
I don't know. I know there are pipelines that go over altitudes all over the country, high altitude, so I don't see why it would be a factor. It's temperature more than altitude that affects viscosity, the ability of the liquid to flow. And since they're going to heat this, I don't see why altitude would make any difference. And somebody brought up pumping uphill. They pump up and down mountains all over the country because they have to go up and down different altitudes. So that's something they've been doing for years and years and years. So that's nothing new as far as this pipeline is concerned. So I don't know why altitude would make any difference.
My guess is that it's what you said. It has to do with just trying to keep that temperature of the crude, I guess. And I don't see any reason why it would increase the likelihood of having a disastrous result just because they hadn't put it at this elevation before. I think it just has to do with the fact that it's colder more often, or maybe it's the ground temperature is a little colder. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Rod.
That's what I'm guessing.
Scott's going to weigh in, but let's not forget, and we'll take the second part of her question as well about Salt Lake County and our neighbors, and what are they up to, and how do they feel about all this? But Scott.
Yeah. So as far as the capacity goes, we design a lot of water pipelines, and there is a limit on capacity, a finite limit. I mean, you can only flow so much at so much pressure, and then. The flow stops, because there's so much head loss in the pipeline if you start pushing more product through it. So there is a limit. Of course, it is variable. It's not just a given volume per day. It is variable, but there's a limit to it.
Good technical expertise. Now let's go on to any information you could shed, Bob, on Salt Lake.
I don't know if actually I have been told that Salt Lake has made it clear that they would do everything possible to reduce pipelines going through their county. The refinery issue is, when I was in Mesa County, Colorado, we had this then mothballed refinery, and they really cause major air quality issues, refineries do. On the other hand, raise your hand if you intend never to drive to Salt Lake again. I mean, one way or another, we don't refine there, where do we refine? I guess we could go to a more rural area of the county to refine, but I don't know. We need to find ways as people to find alternative energy sources. I particularly like natural gas. It doesn't, and the county's moving its fleet, it doesn't require refining, and it's plentiful here, and it burns cleaner. But then others would argue for solar or whatever, so I don't know.
Thank you.
I attempted to answer.
We have three more questions queued up. Let's try to get to all three of them before the hour is up. Sir, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Carl Sears. I live in Heber City. The question is for Scott. How close does the pipeline actually come to the Weber River? Are fishermen going to be stumbling over it, or what? And I like the idea that Chris advanced, that in areas where the pipeline does come close to the river, how about building a berm so that if there is a leak, it's going to flow away from the river? And it sounds to me like this stuff is so viscous that it's almost a positive, because it's going to solidify quickly and it's not going to spread all over the countryside. And to me, I was a scientist, a natural products chemist. That's a big advantage. It's going to be a lot easier to contain something that's viscous that solidifies quickly. But I like the idea of putting it in a berm. Has that been discussed with them, possibly?
Yeah, it has been discussed, and I think they're open to it. They have limited jurisdiction as far as what they can do on the surface other than restoration, but we've talked to them about berming. And has been brought up prior to this, there are several river crossings that are going to take place. The original alignment that you see back there on the map, there was locations where it was within 50 feet of the river in many locations. And so, but with the newer alignments, we're hoping that alignment will be significantly further away. But with the valving of the pipeline, the viscosity of the fluid, which is a huge benefit in our minds, and we're concerned that they might find a way to take that waxy product out of the oil and make it more flow more easily, but the viscosity and the waxiness of it is a benefit, I think.
Well, in the area where it parallels the river, how close does it come physically? 50 feet, 100 feet?
So, like I said, prior in the original alignment, it was within 100 feet, definitely. Now it's closer to a half a mile away from any
really?
Any water main water supply, the reservoir, river. But there are locations up in Camas Valley where it still parallels the river. I haven't paid too much of attention up there. I've been more concerned about the lower Weber.
And just one comment, living in Heber, a comment to your friend who wrote about trucks, what's 250 less? It's a big deal because these trucks are heavy, really heavy. They do a disproportionate amount of damage to the roads. In addition, if you hit them, you're going to get killed. So I'd rather deal with a pipeline leakage than I would people continuing to get killed getting hit by these trucks.
Okay, thank you, sir. Next.
Bob,
yeah.
Can I make a quick point on the viscosity? It's nice that the stuff's viscous, but we maybe shouldn't plan on depending on that too long in the long term. With the Trans-Alaska pipeline, they initially started with a 1 million barrel per day capacity. They figured out a way to make it less viscous and stepped it up to 1.2 million barrels per day about 2 or 3 years into the pipeline's life. And I'm sure that wasn't by taking something out, that was by putting something in. They even figured out later they'd dissolve a little bit of natural gas in it, and so now they have a natural gas source at each of their pump stations. They can draw some gas off the top. These guys are, you know, the technology gets better and better, and they probably will learn to reduce our viscosity. And in 10 or 15 years of this pipeline goes in, it won't be as viscous as it is now.
Okay, thank you. Sir, your name and question?
It's Clint Benson, and I'm a Wanship resident. My question's for Bob. I'm just curious, I know there's a provision in the CUP where they can't put the pipeline within 500 feet of any structure. Can we have faith in that provision to stay in place to protect market values of properties?
I think they trump us in terms of, Tom, don't they go within 500 feet of your house?
Yeah, all of the alignments that we've worked on through my area are it's certainly within 500 feet of numerous buildings and probably within 500 feet of a couple of houses. One of the concerns I had with the county ordinance when I read those kind of offset limits was whether that precluded a future building, because if the pipeline comes through the frontage of my property and hugs the highway right-of-way, the level of damage to the value of the remainder of the property isn't terrible. If the county ordinance actually requires me to not build anything within 500 feet of the pipeline, Tesoro's not buying that 500 feet, but my right to use the 500 feet goes away. And that's a huge impact that I'm not entirely comfortable with where we are. And I don't understand how that works with subsequent buildings.
So I'm not sure if I'm clear. Were you asking about current rules or the county ordinance proposed rules?
Yes, well, I got this off the county website, and I'm just looking at it's talking about the temporary ordinance that's in place.
Right.
Which I have comfort in because it is, you know, protecting me somewhat, because my home, I'm assuming, might be within that 500 feet.
Well, again, temporary. That's got to go through the Planning Commission. Pat Putz here, I'm going to throw this curve to him in a month or two. But Tom brings up a good point. Is it then a takings, the county ordinance, because we say you can't, you know, you I don't know. I mean, we're into some charted area. If you wanted to put up a barn and it was, or a house and it's within 500 feet, then the oil company say that's not fair. We already put in the pipeline, so I don't know. It needs some tweaking. I don't know that the right deal under the ordinance is 500 feet. We've got to spend time with that. But the main thing we're looking at now, or at least we're hopeful for, and maybe Scott, you comment, is we're talking about going, you know, not only away from water, but away from a whole lot of houses too, by going quite a bit higher on the mountain. I think the downside to that is you'll have scars. People will see the scars. So, you know, there's trade-offs. Yeah.
I believe this gentleman that has the right-of-way already on your property. I'm sorry, Tom. Mentioned very early on that when he sat down with the Tesoro people about where's the best place for my property for this route to be. I mean, I'm all for the county putting regulations out there, but I will tell you, in my experience, a federally regulated pipeline. They are going to eventually probably throw down the exemption and say we don't have to live by these local rules. If it came to that, they will fight that probably. What they will probably do is if you sit down with them, if you know they're going to route it on your land and say, here's where I plan to build something someday, here's where my structure is right now, if you guys are going to put this on my property, I'd really like you to go right here. And if you get involved in that process, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be satisfied with how it ends up. I'm not saying to cave. If you want them off your property, it's your right to fight it however you want. I think that's probably your best strategy.
And one of the unfortunate difficulties of working with it on that one-on-one basis is that what makes the best sense for protecting the long-term value of my property may not be in the best interest of the guy on the other side of the fence whose property is 250 feet deep, and now he's got a pipeline on my property. Tesoro condemns my property and pays me for the easement, but you're within that 500-foot no-build zone and got screwed. And that's you weren't involved in the condemnation, you weren't affected by it in any way, and that's a concern. And as I'm negotiating what's best for me, I get along pretty well with my neighbors. Mark lives just down the street from me, but when they were originally looking at coming through the cabin subdivision and we were trying to decide which neighbor took the hit, we all had a couple of nominees. You know, and that's a concern because we're all looking out for ourselves and not necessarily what's best for everybody.
Let's see if we could fit one more question in. Glenn Wright, we've got about 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. I think we heard early on that maybe some of the long-term consequences are the aging of the pipeline. 50, 60, 70 years down the road, we're making decisions for our great-grandchildren. Is there a mechanism for the county or some other independent organization to monitor the maintenance procedures on the pipeline? How is that controlled? When is a pipeline taken out of service? Everybody says Tesoro is a great company right now, but what if a successor company isn't so great?
Good question. Earlier we talked about, I didn't weigh in on it because my experiences with PHMSA on the natural gas side, and it really is two sets of regulations. It's in the same book, and I've never read the part of the book that's about the liquid side because it's never been part of my responsibilities in my job. But there's a federal agency that has a set of regulations on how pipelines are designed and constructed and operated and maintained,
which we haven't chosen yet.
And organizations that are regulated by that agency have to keep records that prove that they've been doing that, and they get audited. Mm-hmm. The auditors come in and look at those records and determine whether they're complying. Is it 100% foolproof? No, but that's how it's done. And so I don't think the city would ever be able to get involved in that. There are some states that have taken over that responsibility and made an actual agreement with PHMSA. I think the state of Washington is one, where their public utility commissions that would regulate like the Questars and the local utilities with respect to that same thing.
If I can, I know we're
they've taken
time.
Over the pipelines.
I think one of the reasons Summit County got involved in this was there was some discussion this was an intrastate pipeline and not an interstate pipeline. Is that true, and does that affect those regulations?
Well, yeah, in a legal analysis, we thought that the difference in type interstate, it wasn't so much, we thought, federal, and the state doesn't do a whole lot, and so we thought we'd jump in and fill that that void.
True.
We're going to have to leave it there. I'm sure if you have additional questions, the panel would be happy to answer after we conclude. But I hope that we've illuminated. This is the Project for Deeper Understanding, and so I hope that you have a deeper understanding of this issue than before we started. And let's one last time thank Tom and David and Scott and Rob and Gary and Chris and Bob for doing really an excellent job for all of us. Okay, and that now concludes our live broadcast, so we go back to the KPCW studios.